Let's start there, because since we're talking a little baseball right now, you got to go into the booth and do some Pirates baseball. What was that experience like for you, and why did you do it?
It was brand new. It was something that I wanted to do, but only once, before I shuffled off this mortal coil. and I suppose that between the Pirates and myself, we looked at myself in the mirror and said, we better get this done for this guy. And so I got a chance to do some innings of preseason baseball. And there was an HBO special last November that Andrea Kramer had been prodding me during the 3 days of taping. You really should try baseball. And you grew up loving it, and you still like the Pirates. And finally she got me to admit that, yes, I would like to do an inning of Pirates baseball. It didn't make the cut. But at the end of her conversation with Bryant Gumbel, she did mention, after he asked, is there anything else he wants to do, she said that. Well, Bob Costas was watching the show that night and called me the next day. I was sitting at Tim Hortons on Hancock, quietly having a coffee, and I saw this area code flash on my screen, 314. Where's that? It's St. Louis. I don't think I know anybody from St. Louis. And sure enough, it was Bob, and he said, I think we can make this happen. So in July, I met up with the MLB crew for their Friday night game, and Bob did the first three innings, and he said, you can go as long as you want. So at the end of the fifth, I told him, I think I can finish the sixth, and then it's back to you. But the Pirates were winning. They were beating Arrieta and the Cubs like they did last night, and that's odd, but they were doing a good number on him, and so the crew apparently took a vote and decided, let's let him have the top of the ninth inning so he can finish it off. And it was a wonderful experience. It's over. It's the last time I'll do it. But it was a wonderful experience to have. I hope that I get a chance to help somebody else out like he did me, because there are probably people that have always wanted to be a part of a hockey broadcast. And he did explain to some of the reporters who asked, you know, how does this happen? He said MLB Network with a cable cast on a Friday night is a little easier than a nationally broadcast Fox game, or, you know, one of the big broadcasts that he's a part of, in that they like to freewheel it a bit. And he has shared the microphone with Al Michaels, who is a broadcaster of baseball too. Mm-hmm. And Tim McCarver, and he's done some fun things that he liked to do. So this gave him a chance to let me do that. And class personified, he called me the week before, and he said, look, this is all set up to enable you to shine. That's all this is about. And he did everything possible to pave the way for me to have a great time and get to do what I'd prepared to do.
So you go from a sport that's constant motion, constant description, constant having to come up with ways to tell people what's going on, to baseball, which pitch to pitch sometimes is like watching a snail.
Yeah. Well, I hadn't sat at home in my life and pretended to do a baseball game. I had never done that. And since I entered hockey in particular, I would never sit at home looking at a guy on the mound on television and pretending what I would say. It's never crossed my mind. But it sure did after the Pirates said, how would you like to sit in for a couple of innings in spring training? Spring training was harmless because, you know, it's casual. Guys are running in the outfield. I mean, what difference does it make if you really make a mess of it? But, you know, a regular season game with the best team in baseball, they and the Giants were the best too, but that changed real fast at the time in the Cubs. I didn't want to sit down at the piano bench with Billy Joel and play just chopsticks. Let's put it that way. I wanted to be ready, and I wanted to have something to offer. I wanted to have something to deliver. So Joyce, my wife, will verify this. As soon as I got back from San Jose, I became probably the most inveterate Chicago Cubs watcher that there was. And I made notes what other people said, and I did get some time, Bob and I did, with Joe Maddon, which was really interesting. I was more interested to listen to the two of them talk in the room, because these are two longtime baseball guys. And I'm sort of an interloper and an observer. I got in a couple of questions myself at the end. But it was interesting to hear them talk about what you've been talking about just before you went on the air. And that is this playoff format. And Bob is of the ilk. And the two of them, both Clint Hurdle and Joe Maddon, acknowledged off camera, of course, that they have the system that they have. But would they object to a best of three first round rather than a one game play-in? No. That it still could be done, and you wouldn't have to play in November. And Bob made a very good case on the air that night for the notion that it would actually reward even more the team that won the division, because then they could play hard to the end and get their pitching rotation in perfect order so that when they did start against the play-in series winner, they'd be ready to rip, whereas the play-in series winner would probably be tired and having to use their third or fourth guy. So there would be something in it for everybody involved, and plus it would, well, he didn't have to tell me as a Pirate fan that we would sooner rather have a best of three because we've blown the last two.
It's so tough too in a one game series where anything,
well, especially if you have to pitch your best guy on the final day of the regular season just to get there. And it's the same question you've been raising in the morning, I know, with, okay, so do you throw Verlander on Sunday if you absolutely have? Well, then what do you got to come back with on Monday? It is fascinating, isn't it? This is my opinion only. Does not reflect the view of the station, because the station has no control over it. It is so much fun to be a part of a show that talks about baseball and hockey from 3 to 5 o'clock because, this is my opinion, and you have no control of it, from 10 to 3 and from 5 to 1 a.m., it's football and basketball. My opinion only. I don't hear much about baseball. I sure don't hear much about hockey. But from 3 to 5, I do. And that's why I'm glad to be on the show. What else we got?
We're glad to have you here on the show. I do talk a little high school football around this time of the year, too.
Oh, no. That's not about you exclusively avoiding the other sports. That's that the national network avoids those two sports that I enjoy more.
Yeah.
I understand the importance of college football and NFL and college basketball and NBA. But the time of year that they are immersed in those always seems curious to me. We've had the Super Bowl. Now there's been a month of talking about it, and we're already talking about the draft, and it's March. Teams are in spring training, but it doesn't seem like they want to talk about that too much. They want to talk about basketball and football, just my opinion.
And
because I have the station on a lot.
You've done NFL. I don't think a lot of people know that.
The world is trying to forget that one.
You've done NFL during one of the hockey work stoppages. Obviously, you still wanted to put food on the table, so you did NFL. Did you did some college basketball, or you were going to do?
No, did.
You did?
A regional tournament in Syracuse. We had a triple overtime between Villanova and Old Dominion.
Oh.
They told me that you do four games in one day. The first day, and then you do the two winners 2 days later, and they said, you'll hit the wall on the third game. Well, all four of our games were nail-biters, and the third game was the triple overtime between Villanova and Old Dominion. Old Dominion won it, and then the last game was Illinois, and I'm trying to remember who they played because it's been 22 years, and that game was right down to the finish, too. Then we got 2 days later, both of them were blowouts. They were over at the end of the first half. So then it was kind of like,
The thrill is gone now.
Yeah. So I don't object to those sports. It's just I wish that when you aren't on, that those guys, I'm sure they can talk about those sports. I just wish they'd talk about them once in a while.
No.
Anyway, that's my opinion.
That's the opinion that
I have a feeling the door will lock behind me on the way out. But anyhow. Do we need to take a break?
Well, I don't think so. I was just checking that. We kind of put a makeshift log together because we weren't expecting to be on today. So we will take a break, but Doc Emmerich is here. The Tigers are in a rain delay, and we are monitoring that situation. So if they do decide to start up, we'll let you know, and we'll get the game on the air. But I think we're going to be pretty safe here, at least until 5 o'clock. So we'll take a break and we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Dennis Stuckey Show on 1380 WPHM.
All right, welcome back. The Dennis Stuckey Show here on WPHM, and Mike Emmerich is along in studio today. Have you enjoyed your peaceful summer, I hope?
Oh, yeah, yeah, wonderful time. Yeah, I stayed mostly within the boundaries of Michigan, and am staying within the boundaries of Michigan for my first game. It's next Tuesday in Marquette.
Marquette?
Yes, Kraft Hockeyville. We were in Johnstown last year, and the essay contest, which goes on volume as well as quality of essay, was won by Marquette, Michigan this year over Rapid City, South Dakota.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, they were the two finalists, and Marquette won. And so at the Lakeview Arena, which seats 3,100 in this town of 21,000, we are televising Tuesday night, 8 o'clock on NBCSN. The matchup is curious, Buffalo and Carolina. Last year we had Pittsburgh and Tampa, which made quite a bit more sense in Johnstown. But anyway, the league does these things, so hopefully we'll get Jack Eichel and, you know, some star caliber players, but we don't have any control over that either. But it'll be a great thing for people in that area, and that'll be coming up on Tuesday night. So Marquette, I've never been there, but people that have been there say it's really unique. It's a lot of fun, and like this town, it's right on a lake.
Yeah.
Right on Lake Superior.
I was just there in July.
You were.
So right after the Mackinac race.
You were.
Katie and I took a week, and we went through the UP, and we did spend a night in Marquette, and we ate at Stuckey's, but it was spelled differently.
Really? Well, I'll have to look for it.
It's within walking distance of the Superior Dome on the campus of the college there, and it's Stucky, and it's a little burger joint and pub.
I'll have to look for it because I've done enough reading in advance. I know that it's also known as the Upper Dome by locals there, and it is the largest wooden dome in the world.
On the outside, though, it looks like it's the world's largest duct tape dome.
Does it?
There's a white material over the wood, and I said, wow, I wonder how many rolls of duct tape they used on this thing, because that's what it looked like to me.
Did it?
Inside, it's very nice.
Is it?
And they have their Hall of Fame up behind the one end zone with the plaques all on the wall, and I was amazed at how many people have gone to Northern Michigan University that I had no idea. Very famous people, and several NHL and Olympic guys as well.
So. Yeah, I talked with Bob Chase about that area because he's from Negaunee, which is about 15 miles away from Marquette.
I've been to Negaunee.
And he was a Northern Michigan basketball player, so another Northern Michigan guy, and played at Lakeview Arena. And before that, in a place called the Palestra, which a Michigan Tech professor referred me to one of his articles about the history of hockey in Marquette. And there was a hockey team about 10 miles away, and so the arena was built there, and it failed. And so they dismantled the arena piece by piece, put it on railroad cars, and Marquette wanted it. And so the railroad took the arena in pieces in boxcars to Marquette, where it was reconstructed, became the Palestra, and it was there until the 1970s. Bob played in that one too.
Wow,
it's fun. I like history, and it means a lot to those people to have this kind of attention. Plus, $150,000 for arena improvements, and I'm sure there was an entry from McMorrin. I'm sure they had an entry the previous year, and all I'll do is encourage them to keep entering. We don't have any say over who wins, but it never hurts to get an entry in because I think Kraft is going to continue to do this. There's a winner in the U.S. and a winner in Canada, and I think the winner in Canada was in British Columbia this year.
Wow. I hope it was in Chilliwack.
Might have been.
Good stuff. World Cup of Hockey has been going on. And, when they first announced the format with the Team Europe and the Team North America, I had my trepidations.
Well, I know. I know.
I was just like, let's just keep it with the six countries that can field a team or open it up to more than just NHL players, and I get why they don't want to do that. But I'll tell you what, Europe's in the finals, and they have far superseded what I thought they would do when you put together what guys from eight different countries and say, oh, okay, you got about a week to get ready for this and go get them. And then I guess Team North America, and I didn't get to see them play a game, but they were the darlings of the tournament. Everybody said that team was so fast that it was ridiculous.
You were here most of the time when they played.
Yeah.
And that's the drawback to having 3:30 and 8 o'clock games is you can see the 8 o'clock, but most times they were penciled into the 3:30. Yeah, they were wonderful to watch. And isn't it odd that the two hybrid teams, one got to the final and one turned out to be, you know, the darling of the tournament, the other the Cinderella. But, yeah, it's been fascinating, and of course, it's not so fascinating in Pittsburgh where they lost their Stanley Cup goaltender till November and where Marian Gaborik has lost to the Kings until November. We can always point to these things. It's probably worse if they hold this in February like the Olympics is, because then teams have played 40, 50 games by that time and are more worn down. It is the carnage of we can't turn our sport into flag football. Or two-hand touch. It just doesn't work that way. So there are going to be problems with injuries. But it's the nature of the beast, and I suppose we're probably not going to do it for another 12 years. But it's fun to watch. It's great action, and it's fun to watch while it takes place. And I really am excited about what Team Europe has done, pulling all of these nations together and being a cohesive unit as they have. And I hope they put on a great show tonight. I won't be sad if it ends tonight, just because there's so much to pay attention to with these training camps right now. But if it goes on to Saturday, why, that's glorious too. So whatever it is, so be it.
Well, I was, you know, the Americans, it was a disappointing tournament for the U.S., but I think there was undue expectation put on that team. And I think it is every time we get into a tournament. People expect us to be the team that challenges Canada. And I look at the U.S. roster, and it's a good roster, and those are quality players. And if that team were an NHL franchise, it would win a lot more games than it lost.
Right.
But Justin Abdelkader is not the best player on his team. He's a good player.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the case for several on the U.S. roster. I look down this Canadian roster that played in Game 1 against Europe, and more than half the roster are franchise players for the teams that they play for.
And mostly captains.
It's just unfair to think that we should be able to compete with that.
No, it's a magnificent roster. It's probably as good as you can assemble unless you look back to Sochi. And then you compare it with Vancouver, and the U.S. challenged wonderfully in Vancouver. And, you know, part of the hope comes from the fact that they've performed so well in international tournaments, but the World Championship, it's at the end of the year when the Stanley Cup is still going on, and it's not representative of what any of the nations can do because many of their best players are still competing for the Stanley Cup. So this is, I guess, as good a measuring rod or the Olympics that you can have. It's a solid, solid team. Would you have taken somebody the ilk of Phil Kessel instead of Abdelkader? Probably in retrospect now. They constructed the team largely as they did in Vancouver to try to beat Canada, and they almost beat Canada in Vancouver. Were it not for a great goaltending exhibition in Sochi, they would have lost to Canada 7-1. As it turned out, it was closer,
mm-hmm.
and Jonathan Quick was the only reason that it was close. But Canada is wonderful. They got the best guys. Now, at this time in the NHL, 50% of the players are slightly lesser Canadian. At one time, it was 90-some percent. But the guys that are in that are Canadian are wonderful players, and you put them all together, and you give them a coach that the day he retires, start the clock for 3 years, he'll be in the Hall of Fame,
oh, yeah.
Mike Babcock. And that's an unbeatable unity that they have when you put the coaching staff together with Claude Julien and all of those guys who played here. And I believe Morris said he made $350 a week when he was a flag, Claude Julien.
Wow.
Morris told him.
Higher paid player for Morris.
Yeah, that's right. He told him, now this is 1980, 79-80. He said, normally I pay my rookie defenseman $300, but there's something about you I like, so I'm going to give you $350. At the end of that year, and I think the team had one more year in town, at the end of that year, they were out of the playoffs after one round. He called Salt Lake City in the Central, what was called the Central Hockey League. Then he said, I've got a young defenseman. He's only played one year. You're going to like him, and I think he can help you. So Claude got a second chance that year to play for a different team, the Salt Lake City Golden Eagles. Won the championship, he got a ring, and he never forgot what Morris did for him. And that's been a long time ago.
But that's kind of the world of hockey.
It is, isn't it? Yeah.
People are always doing something for somebody, mm-hmm. and there's always there's great stories like that all over the game.
Yeah.
You can go to every team, go into every locker room, and they'll have guys in that room who can tell you a similar story about somebody who did something for them, and that's how they got their break.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, we have the handshake line every year, and I never get tired of it. You know, some people are probably don't think it's really. But it's a, you know, our sport is unique. I wish politics were that way. Huh. But our sport is unique in that, but our sport probably isn't as lucrative as politics. So anyway, what else?
Well, I got all kinds of things that we can talk about.
Okay.
It's kind of early as far as training camps are concerned. And because of the World Cup, not everybody is assembled. And the early games, like the rosters for the first two Red Wing games here, they beat Boston last night. I think the Bruins had five guys in the lineup that I knew something about. And the Red Wings didn't have very many more.
Yeah. One of the things that happened with the World Cup is they waived the 8-veteran limit for preseason rosters. I honestly thought it was 10, but it was 8, so it's been trimmed down to 8, and they waived that because of so many veterans being gone for the World Cup. So finally, guys are getting back now on losing teams that didn't get to the finals, so they're back. They were allowed 1 week. Some showed up earlier. I think Teravainen and Aho are came back to Carolina practically immediately from the Finnish team. So the rosters are not going to look terribly representative. Yet, you know, Friday, I would assume that Boston is going to have as many of their guys that they can to play in Detroit. They've used a lot of 65 and 75 numbered guys. And I saw their game against Columbus on television. And then Sunday at 6, Chicago is here. And except for Taves, I don't know. I don't know that they have anybody else in the final.
They have Taves. They have
but
Taves.
Anyway, at 6 o'clock here. Yeah,
Taves, Crawford? Is Crawford still a goalie in Canada?
Oh, yes, he sure is. Yeah, okay. I'm sorry, I overlooked him, which is one of the temptations that I guess we've had, is that Crawford's a wonderful goaltender, but he always gets overlooked because of
Carey
the prominence
Price.
Of Price. Yeah. Yeah. But so 6 o'clock game down at the Joe on Sunday. Lions play earlier that day.
Lions are in Chicago. Yeah, that's a 1 o'clock
game. Oh, yeah,
game.
You were talking about the Bears today. I remember that, yeah.
The Bears. They've got to win that game. Anyways, but Thomas Vanek, I thought, looked really good the other night, so that's encouraging.
It's really heartening.
That's the one off-season, well, there were two off-season moves. I was not happy when they re-signed Darren Helm. The Vanek signing is either, because he's either, it's there's no in-between. He's either going to go out and score 5 goals and stink it up, or he's going to score 35 and be a hero in Detroit because they sorely need a guy that can put the puck in the net.
They need great help on the power play, and that's what they were hoping for. Nielsen, I think, is a player, and he's still young enough, and he's really productive. I like him a lot, and he will win you some shootouts, because anybody that can be over 50% in a shootout history is great. And they're probably only, the last I checked, there were only 4 guys. Taves is one of them. So he's great on that. He's a skilled guy. He'll probably enable Zetterberg even to move to a wing if they decide they want to do that with him. And Vanek will help the power play. Fans will like Ott, and they'll grow to love him if he produces like he did last night. But there aren't many snarl, ornery, mean guys on the Red Wings roster. Ott fulfills that for Detroit. And so I think for that reason, they'll probably... He's sort of a throwback, although it's terrible to compare. He's sort of a throwback to McCarty in that he'll talk to somebody at the face-off and say... And one of the things that he's always done, you probably noticed this with Dallas and with Buffalo, is if it's some rookie, and he'll go behind him and pull on the back of his jersey so as to read his name and say, "Who are you?" So these are the kind of things that Ott does. But Ott was saying yesterday, I think in one of the press conferences, he said, "Watch our fourth line this year." And last night they were really productive. I think Glendening had...
He had 3 points.
3 points. And Ott had, what, one?
Three
and two?
Points.
Yeah.
And Miller had two. So
now, given you're up against Providence as opposed to Boston, and that's probably going to be some of the case tomorrow night, but it's heartening to see that there might be a little more productivity there. But he won't be dull. That's the one thing about Steve Ott. He won't be dull.
And Thomas Tatar has had a good tournament
as well,
so that's very encouraging.
If those guys, if Nyquist can come back to what he was 2 years ago, these are all the ifs that were allowed late in September, and if Tatar can do the same thing, then they can compete for a 26th straight year in the playoffs. Otherwise, they're going to be just like a bunch of other teams, and they're going to be in there. But they're going to be out of there and then in there and out of there, and it all depends on the last couple of weeks how it looks. But if they can be up there in the early part of the going, they can be strong early. They won't have to worry as much late. But if the potential gets realized, that's what they say in every city, right?
Oh, yeah.
If the potential gets realized as we look at it here in September and their bounce back years from those guys, they should be fine, including Mrazek.
All right, we got to take a break here, but we've got Doc Emmerich in the studios, and we are still in a rain delay with the Tigers, so we'll be right back in just a few moments here on the Dennis Stuckey Show. And Doc Emmerich is here joining us today, and we're just casually chatting the day away.
I didn't know that about you, about your first year in radio. See, my first year was here.
It wasn't my first. My first year was in Carroll, which is why I was staying in an apartment in Carroll, because you could get an apartment in Carroll that four people could live in, and it only cost $200 a month. Yeah. So I thought that was a pretty good deal for a guy whose paycheck was less than $200 at that time.
Well, do you mind saying what you did? This is interesting to me, because my first job in radio was here, and I only worked one place, and I lived two doors down, which is now, I think, a counseling center next to the hearing center at 828 Huron. But you commuted twice, so let's hear it.
Yeah, so I started in Carroll, which was full-time, where I worked an 8 to whatever hour day that they needed you to do, because you did everything. But I got an opportunity to go to Saginaw, which I thought was a move up, big market. Problem was, in Saginaw, I only got about 5 hours a day, and that wasn't enough to pay the bills. So Stan Perman, who worked with me in Carroll, was here in Port Huron, and he said, "Well, we're kind of looking for a guy in the afternoons to do sports here." So I took the job, and I would get up in the morning in Carroll, where the apartment was cheap.
Right.
I would drive into Saginaw. It's about a 40-minute drive. I would work at KCQ in Saginaw in the mornings, and then I'd get in the car and drive from Saginaw to Port Huron to do the afternoon shift here, and then I'd go home at night.
when did you sleep? And don't say behind the wheel.
No, not behind the wheel. Although one night in particular, we had a really bad ice storm, and you know how 69 can get. And it took me about 4 hours to get home when normally it's about an hour and a half ride.
Wow.
So, but I did that
for about... The sacrifices that you make.
I did that for about 6 months, and then they offered me full-time work here in Port Huron, so I said goodbye to the folks in Saginaw.
Good.
It was fun.
There are always interesting stories on how people start. You know, it's one of my favorite questions when I run into people that... The last time I think I asked this was Chip Kelly, who was at that time coaching the Philadelphia Eagles, I always ask him about the first job. Did I tell you this story on the air? Okay. So we were at Fenway Park. I was there for a baseball or for hockey playoffs, and on the off day, we went over to see a regular season game in April. And Chip was there because it was far away from an NFL season. He'd just taken the job in Philadelphia. So we wound up meeting one another up in one of the press box areas. And I said, what was your first job like? And almost invariably, when you ask that question, the first thing somebody does is smile. And he said, I was an assistant coach at Columbia University in New York. Assistant coach, $6,000 a year. And they allowed us to eat one meal a day in the school cafeteria. And they allowed us also to styrofoam one meal back to our dorm.
Wow. I wish I had that my first year of radio. And of course, because I made about $6,000 my first year in radio.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, you know, he was smiling then because he was going to be coach of the Philadelphia Eagles. And he has moved since from that job to another, but there's always that recollection as you think back, yeah, I sacrificed a lot in the very early years of that. I remember calling my old coach at Bowling Green when I took the job here. This is $160 a week. And so I called him and said, I've got a job in hockey and it's in radio in Port Huron. And instead of saying congratulations, he said, what are you making? And I told him, and he said, you're working for nothing. And his wife grabbed the phone away from him and said, ask him how much he made in his first coaching job. So that shut him up. You know, we all do that. We all sacrifice. But it's part of doing a job that you love, and you never wanted to do anything else, and somebody finally gave you a chance.
And I'm guessing you certainly don't regret
No.
coming up to Port Huron and making $160 a week to start, because
it wasn't bad.
It led to better things, didn't it?
No, I met Joyce the next year, and that's been 38 years, and life got pretty good. And I've been getting in free to hockey games ever since. It's a good deal.
Yeah.
Gee, it's raining outside.
Yeah, that's.
Wonder if it's just as bad in Detroit.
That's not a good sign, is it? I never told you, but I actually got into radio in Carroll just to be a DJ and just to play rock and roll music. And there I was on a Friday night spinning Led Zeppelin records, and the boss came in and said, the guy can't make it for the high school football game tonight. I'm sending you out to do it. He didn't ask me if I knew anything about football or anything, and we went out and did the Reese Rockets and the Unionville Seabwing Patriots. The game went to running time because USA won like 55-6 or something. And when I got back to the station, the boss and the general manager were all sitting there, and I'm thinking, oh man, I am done for. I did something wrong, and I'm getting the ziggy right here, you know, a month into my first job.
Yeah.
And they said, we really liked how you did the game tonight. You're going to do it from now on. And that's how I got into sports and became a sports broadcaster. Huh.
Pat Quinn used to always say, the late Pat Quinn, for every injury, a star can be born.
I did feel bad for the guy that normally did it.
Well, yeah.
And I don't know how they broke the news to him, because I wasn't there when they did
Wally Pipp was his name, right?
Yep. Wally Pipp. All right, we've got to take a break. We've got an NBC Sports update here at the top of the hour, and then we'll be back with hour number two of the Dennis Stuckey Show here on WPHM, where we are Monday through Friday from 3 until 5.
It's the Dennis Stuckey Show on 1380 WPHM.
All right, welcome back. It's the Dennis Stuckey Show, hour number two here. We are still in a holding pattern as far as your Tiger game is concerned today. A lot of rain down in the Detroit area, more, I guess, than what we've had up here. They actually had flash flood warnings this morning. In fact, I was reading that Brad Ausmus was woken up to his cell phone buzzing to give him the flash flood warnings. And normally he has a 50-minute drive into the ballpark, and it took him something like an hour and a half today to get into the ballpark because the streets were flooded that he drives on to get into Detroit. So they had a lot of rain. The field took a ton of rain, and I think that's going to be the bigger question, because they probably could have played in the rain that they're in right now or that they've had today, but the field, I guess, is very saturated. So we'll see what happens there. But you were Mike Emmerich is with us on the program today, and you were telling me you actually have, for those of you that know what records are, vinyl, you have one that was just conversations a broadcaster had during rain delays.
There was this great baseball pitcher from the Yankees, Babe Ruth era, named Waite Hoyt. And when I was growing up, Waite was the voice of the Cincinnati Reds. And he was so good at filling rain delays that people loved when the Reds got rain delays, because Waite would tell all of these stories. Many of them were about Babe Ruth. And there were two editions, and one of them was strictly about Babe Ruth. And that's the one I have. It's a vinyl record. And the titles are Waite in the Rain. And at one point during one of his stories, he starts laughing because there was a canopy that some fans had put up to protect themselves from the rain, and it had collapsed, and they were all getting wet, and Waite's just going nuts laughing at them. But he was so skilled at that. But when I was in small market radio as a college student in central Indiana, near where Bill Gilmer grew up, I was on the board here doing Chicago White Sox games, and they would fill during rain delays too. They would occasionally throw for station breaks, but otherwise they kept it. In Pittsburgh, there was a guy on radio named Jim Rooker who was famous for, among other things, in a game in Philadelphia, the Pirates got 9 runs in the top of the first, and he said, if we lose this game, I'll walk back to Pittsburgh. Well, they lost the game 10-9, and he did later in the summer, had to walk 320 miles down the turnpike, and told me at one of the Pirates training camps that he actually hurt his ankle, and it still hurts to this day from having done it. So, but anyway, so he's on taking phone calls. Way to kill time during a rain delay, and he's getting nothing. So one of my buddies, Ben Boma, who is now our stats guy on NBC, was working in the Pirates PR office. And he and one of his buddies in the office realized Rooker's been on, he's getting nothing. So they called the switchboard and they said, put us through. So this one guy faked a Pittsburgh accent. And he said, hi, this is Chris from the South Side. Hey, you know, I see Jim Leland and sitting behind home plate with Chuck Tanner. I mean, what are they doing there? And so Rooker explained, he said, they're both advisors to the Pirates, and they watch the games, and they pass along information that they have. Said, I got another question. Now, in the history of the Pirates, there's probably one important moment in the last 60 years, and that was in 1960, Game 7 against the Yankees. Bill Mazeroski hit a home run in Pittsburgh over the left center field wall and what we'd now call a walk-off. So the second question, you know, I've been looking at that Mazeroski home run. You know that ball was foul? And Rooker said, what? I said, I've been looking at that home run. I've been seeing the video of that home run. That ball was foul. So then he knew something was up. But that was how it was done years ago. WGN Chicago, they would send it back to the station for music. And so then there was no network of the Cubs games. It was just one station that carried it, and there was no network line. And so they would fill, and they would also have a post-game scoreboard that would include music. And so you would get the scores, and then Jack Quinlan or Lou Boudreau would say, I'm going to check the wire for later scores, back to our studio for this music, Gogie Grant and some song. And so there would be a music played, and then they'd give you the final, because it was afternoon.
Yeah.
And usually there would be other teams playing in the afternoon. This was archaic times 50 years ago. So that's all a part of old radio history that we don't have now. But
no, I
but
know.
Yeah, they would fill rain delays, and it would be fun because the fans now with connected phone lines and everything would have a part of it.
I know you had a unique situation, and I've had them before too. You were in Des Moines, and they did a wedding on the ice.
You had one of those?
We had a wedding at McMoran. It didn't delay me like you were delayed, but somebody had the bright idea of throwing rice, and didn't realize that when it hit the ice, what would happen.
Stick,
and you
right?
had quite a delay, and back then, you had nothing to do except talk to yourself pretty much, right?
Yeah, Ron Zwankowski was the newsman at night here, and he had already done his five-minute newscast, and then it was up to you to fill the rest of the intermission. Well, that was fine if it was a normal intermission. This was December 14th, 1973, and I got word from Paul Vigilante, the PR guy, who later went on to Trine University. He's a Michigan State guy and is still very much tied to the Michigan Sports Hall of Fame here in the state to this day. And he was there that morning at the practice, and he said, we usually get 1,500 people. It's probably going to be 1,800 tonight because we're going to have a wedding at Center Ice. And I said, I beg your pardon. And he said, don't worry, it's only going to lengthen the intermission by about 10 minutes. So the deal was, at the end of the first period, the Port Huron players left. Bob McCammon was in his first year of coaching. Ray Germain, if he happens to be listening over in Sarnia, was one of the players that left the ice. The Des Moines players were asked to stay because the president of the Des Moines Capitals fan club was marrying one of the members at Center Ice. So I know you have, but I don't know if our listeners have ever smelled wet hockey equipment. So these guys are staying on the ice. They are asked, there's a long mat that comes out from the end boards. That's hers. There's a short mat that comes along the red line. That's his and the minister's. So he and the minister walk out on this mat. The players are asked to stand on either side of the long mat and hold their hockey sticks up with the blades touching to form an arch. And I'm sure when she took her first step onto the mat, she said, this doesn't smell like a church to me. You'd have to think, right? So anyway, they get out, and the PA system is turned on, and it's a very short ceremony, and the minister pronounces them man and wife. He kisses her. They lock arms, and they head back down this long mat under this arch of hockey sticks. And that Midwestern custom that we talked about of throwing rice, well, they didn't have rice there, but they had everything else. They had scorecards and hot dog wrappers and beer cups. And it all came flying out over the screens. They had no glass in Des Moines. It came flying up over the screens and onto the ice. Now, there were two maintenance men working the game. And so they detached the nets and pushed them around the ice like rakes to scoop up all the debris and then shove it off at the end where the Zamboni came out. So the delay of 10 minutes was 45. And Ron had done his five-minute newscast, and he had moved on to covering city council or whatever else he had to do at that hour. And so I was on my own. And on the road, we didn't work with anybody else. So,
And
we won the game.
Yeah. And back in those days, the IHL, it wasn't like you had a stat packet where you could go through and read the leading scores. They really didn't keep stats back then.
No notes or anything. You got stats once a week on Monday morning. And you had to update them yourself. Well, there was no way of getting box scores from other teams then. It just wasn't possible. So you were on your own. Billy Watt, who lives here in town, he was one of the guys that missed the wedding because he was to come off and go to the dressing room. It was something. But
and no way to get message down to, hey, send somebody up to the booth to talk to me.
Right. But as I said, we won the game, so it wasn't all that bad. But Des Moines did go on that year to win the championship, and they retired every number, and so the next year the lowest number was 21 and the highest was 39. Go figure.
Opening night for the new flags, the community-owned flags, was an absolute nightmare.
What happened?
So in the first period, the glass behind the visiting net where the East Uppers are, that comes out and breaks. And they work on it for 10 or 15 minutes and then realize they don't have a piece to replace the broken piece. So they finagle the broken piece back in to where the end is chipped. So they put that at the top, and then they put some duct tape in there to patch up the hole, which, by the way, it stayed there for the rest of the season.
Really?
So we get through that delay. Okay, that's fine. That took about 20, 25 minutes in the middle of the first period. We play for another couple of minutes, and the linesman gets hit along the boards in front of the penalty box and gets a broken leg. So now there's the delay because the paramedics have to come out onto the ice and they have to get him on the stretcher and get him off the ice. And that was over a half hour delay there. So that's fine. We finish the first period. The second period is incident free until there's about a minute to go in the period. And they stop play because the face-off circle, again, down where the East Uppers would be, there's an advertisement under the ice. And it was some sort of rubber mat that had been laid underneath the surface. Well, it was now melting through, and the rubber was poking through the ice.
My.
So
the rubber was coming through the ice?
It was coming through the ice. So they had to rebuild the ice over it. Well, you know that you can't do that. And
it's not going to happen fast, no.
Minutes. It took them about an hour and a half, I believe, to patch this ice. Herb Hammond, God rest his soul, was up in the booth, just happened to be at that moment standing in the booth. I didn't ask him. I reached out and I grabbed him by the hair and I pulled him over and I said, Herb, you're with me until this is fixed. And Herb and I talked for an hour and a half straight. Most of the people went home. Mm-hmm. Because at this point, we're now, it's a school night, and we're now past 11 o'clock at night. And so, I don't know, maybe 100 people stayed for the third period. The game ended about 1 o'clock in the morning. Port Huron was down 4-1 going into the third period, and everybody missed their only comeback of that season because we didn't win very many games. But they stormed back to beat Danbury 5-4 in shootout. That night.
That was the Trashers?
Yes, that was the Trashers.
Wow.
That one, though, was a nightmare.
Wow. You couldn't have picked a better guy to grab than Herb.
Oh,
what a wonderful human being.
As soon as I looked up and I said, oh, I'm not letting him get away.
Yeah. Did your conversation go long enough to talk about the Red Sox?
We talked about everything you can imagine, from Brown University hockey to the Red Sox to drafting guys for the New York Rangers.
Good.
It was he was an absolute godsend in that situation. So
good. Well, this was where you would, in the old days, you'd play George Shearing with the quintet, Here's to That Rainy Day, and go to commercial and hope that somebody in Detroit would tell you something. Van Patrick with Mel Ott. I used to hear them, but all I'm doing is dating myself here. It goes back 50 years. But in the early years, they were the Tigers announcers a long, long time ago, back in the days of filling rain delays. Have we heard anything about them perhaps playing today yet?
Well, we'll find out. We do have to take a break here, and maybe we'll know more to answer your question when we come back in just a moment here on the Dennis Stuckey Show, along with Mike Emmerich today here on WPHM. All right, welcome back, the Dennis Stuckey Show, and we have Doc Emmerich for a few more minutes here before he's got to take off. Appreciate it. Doc brought in a pizza, and I haven't gotten a slice.
It's about
yet.
Time you had some. You want me to penalty kill here? I can read the phone book.
Sean Morrow, who is
no,
here.
We don't
to
have phone books anymore.
Board hop the Tiger game. That, actually, Gilmer has a drawer full of them in the newsroom, and I don't know what he uses them for. Kindling, maybe. I don't know.
Was that right?
If the heat ever goes out in the winter. poor Bill. You didn't go to the Olympics this summer. Did you miss it or no?
No, not really. It was a decision I made a couple of years ago. The Olympics are exciting, exhilarating, fun, and all of that, but it's 17 straight days of work, and you get one day off, and you basically work and sleep. And it's not like that is bad. It's just that after you've done eight of those, it's just not as appealing sometimes. And it was water polo, and there are plenty of people who can do water polo. There are plenty of people who can do hockey. I don't know what my thoughts are about 2 years from now, but a couple of years ago, it was you know, pretty much decided that our season on NBC goes right to the last game, and that was the middle of June. So the summer's short enough without shortening up even more, because they would have had to have left in fairly late July and into August, and then all of a sudden you're looking at World Cup, and even though we didn't carry that, but watching it and being involved in watching it, and then training camps. And so it just seemed like this was a time to be around here. And we stay, Joyce and I stay within the state of Michigan. We do a lot of camping in the summertime. So it was enjoyable, and the weather was really good for that.
Yeah.
Just not today.
Just not today. No, we had a beautiful summer. And for me, it was a very fast summer. It just seemed to go by in a blur.
I bet it did. I'm glad you got some time to go across the UP.
Yeah, it's I had been, as a kid, we went every summer. Mm-hmm. My mother was originally, she was born in Calumet. She grew up in Detroit, mm-hmm. but she was actually born in Calumet. So we went up there as kids a lot. Katie hadn't been up and seen any of those places, so of course we went to Quamenon Falls and all the usual tourist traps along the way. Mm-hmm. But we had a lot of fun. I was sick one afternoon. We think it was the heat because we had a couple of hot days.
But, wasn't anything at Stuckey's, though.
No. And that happened to be a day where we were camping, so I slept in the tent all day, and Katie hiked like 18 miles to the upper falls at Tequamanon.
She's a champ. Just, 18
just,
miles?
Just like it's nothing.
Yeah.
I think it was something like that. She'll text me and tell me what the actual mileage was and probably how many steps it was, because she's got one of those little step counter things that she wears.
Wow. But
I know I wouldn't have made it. I would have driven the car over there and met her there.
Is it too early to determine who we have back from last year's championship team here? I get the idea Joe will be back.
Joe will be back, although he suspended the first five games of the season for being naughty in the finals.
Ah, yes, I seem to remember that game. Yes, okay.
But at this point,
Joe Pace, we're talking about.
Yeah, at this point, it's interesting, Doc, because I'm not really sure. Justin Alonso, the team's leading scorer, is out in Arizona where he's got a job in the real world. And mm-hmm. it looks like he's going to retire from hockey. Ahmed Mahfouz is an interesting situation as well. Ahmed signed in the offseason with Cornwall in the League of North American Hockey, which is that league up in Quebec that's pretty rough and tumble.
Oh, yes.
Well, that team folded, and the owners of that team are now the owners of the new FHL team in Cornwall, which popped up about 48 hours after their other franchise in the other league folded. So there was a dispersal draft. I'm going to assume somebody in that league claimed Ahmed, and he could go play there. But if he wants to come back and play in the Federal Hockey League, in particular in Cornwall, well, we own his rights, so they would have to make a trade with us, or he could just come back and play here, mm-hmm. which would be the preferred, I think. Chris Levier, our other superstar, has a tryout in the East Coast Hockey League. So he's going to camp there.
He is he the guy that had a job in Guelph?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So if he makes it there, he's good enough that I think he would stay.
Mm-hmm.
If he doesn't make it there, then we would see him back here in Port Huron by the time our camps open up. Dustin Skinner was traded during the offseason. He was our other big sniper, but he's probably going to retire as well. So that's a good question as to who will be the new stars here in Port Huron. Dayton folded, so we did get Dayton's top player, who was a runner-up for the Hobie Baker Award when he played at Air Force several years back, and his name is Lamoureux, and I'm Jacques Lamoureux, and Jacques is a very good player, so he'll become an instant fan favorite here. So they'll be all right.
Good.
They lost a lot, but they will reload.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't anticipate the Prowlers not being one of the top teams in the league this year.
Of all things, the Fort Wayne Comets are going to be 65 years old this year. Can you imagine? I was just hearing from Michael Franke, who is the president of the team. They're going to have a lot of their longtime guys on the first home game on the 15th, introducing a lot of guys that played in the very, very early years of the team. I spoke with Bob Chase last week. He's going to be broadcasting the games again. This will be 64 years.
Wow.
He will be 91 in January.
Wow.
And is looking forward to another season. He won't make a lot of the long trips, but he will do the short ones. And sounds just like he always
did. Yeah, sharp as a tack. Huh?
He's funny.
Man. Bad poker face, though.
That's true.
Very bad poker face. Used to have a lot of fun when they would come into town because Lloyd Maxfield had season tickets in the section beneath us at McMorrin. And he, when Chase was in town, he always had to come up to the booth before the game. And then I would mostly just kind of sit back and listen because it's kind of like being in a time machine and getting to go back in time when you hear all the great stories and all the pranks that the guys used to play and the things, a lot of things get talked about that you can't talk about on the air. But it's just, it's so fun to hear them get together and tell stories like that.
Yeah, Lloyd had some time in Fort Wayne, and then, of course, he is the legend here because there is only one first winning coach. And when they won their first championship, it was here. It is a story of legend, and I don't know what sort of time. I look out here, and I can't imagine Detroit's weather being a whole lot better. But it's a story of legend that was the year that they finished fourth and just got in. And Muskegon had a powerhouse and finished first. And the final game of the regular season, have you heard this before? Maybe you have.
Yeah, Frank Golombrowski was on.
Oh, good. So it's been told. Good.
I think it was late August that Frank was here, or early this month. I asked him about that because I've heard so many different versions of it, but it is definitely a true story.
It was the appearance of the somewhat shrinking violet owner of the team, John Wismer, made an appearance in the dressing room and after the final game of the season, which they lost to Des Moines 5-0, and said, "It looks like you guys are going to give me two more gates. You're going to go out four straight." And that was the year they won it all. I don't know if John ever wound up claiming credit for inspiring them. I think that was a team that probably could have done it anyway. But anyway, that's the short version. And the good thing is Frank's such a wonderful guy. I'm glad you had him in here.
Yeah, and they did it too in like 8 or 9 games.
Yeah, it was not prolonged.
Yeah, I believe they swept Muskegon and then they won in the finals in either 4 or 5 games as well. So,
yeah,
Muskegon, that's an interesting place. They have some very interesting goal judges in Muskegon. I know you had an incident there, and I had an incident there in my broadcasting
career. Was the coach's brother-in-law the goal judge the night you were there?
I don't know about that, but I can tell you this. It was definitely not a goal. Puck was shot from center ice, hit the end boards, bounced back into the crease where our goalie, Noah Rudin, fell on top of the puck and smothered it at least 3 feet from the goal line. The referee was out at center ice where the player was dumping the puck in. Goal judge turns on the light, not knowing any better because he's not close enough to it. You get the point and the signal from the goal, and we have no replay. We had no replay back in the UHL. So what he called is what he called. We did have the video guy from Muskegon was right next to me in the booth. We rolled it back during the intermission. And it was laughable. It was laughable. And it cost Noah what would have been his only pro shutout.
Wow. The only one he would have had.
Yeah. We ended up winning the game 3-1, but we won the game that night 3-0.
Ours was a
playoff game. Nowhere near
being
a goal.
And Pat DeMarchi, who had played here in Port Huron, was playing for Muskegon. He hit the left post. It came across and hit the right post and popped out. And the coach's brother-in-law turned on the light and raised his arms up in the air. He was happy.
I guess so. I guess so. Well, Doc, it's always fun to have you here on the program.
Thanks, Dennis. It's a good time this afternoon. It's always wonderful to hear your show. And I'll be listening.
All right.
I always am when I'm in town.
And you have fun this season. I hope you get a lot of good games, and we'll be watching.
Thank you. I appreciate the heads up on all the good things to see and know about Marquette, including Stuckey's.
Yeah.
Spelled differently.
It's right down I wish I could remember the name of the street, but it's within blocks of the Superior Dome.
Okay.
Just straight out of the parking lot and right down that road, and it's right there.
Good working with both of you.
All right.
Wish you guys both well.
All right, we're going to take a break, and the Tigers are going to update us at 4:45 here on the status of what's going on. So when we come back, hopefully I can give you some idea of when or if they're going to play this game today. All right, we'll be back.